About Hilchos Kiddush, we discussed it the last 2 weeks, and we will continue this morning. Let's just give a quick recap of what we're up to, and then we will continue to go forward. We began with the Gemara Pesachim Daf Kuvav, where the Gemara tells us that we learn from the pasuk of Zachar es Yom HaShabbos LeKadosh that a person has a mitzvah midaraisa, a person has a biblical command to recite Kiddush every week on Friday night. What is that responsibility? What is that obligation? How do I have to recite my Kiddush? So the Gemara says, midaraisa, you really don't have to do it on a cup of wine. The Sefer Achinuch explains that Chazal came along, the Chachamim came later on and said, you should do it on a cup of wine for the simple reason that we know that Jews enjoy wine, and since Jews enjoy wine, we're going to have a more pleasant experience as we recite the Kiddush on a cup of wine, because we're doing it with something that we enjoy to do. So therefore, the Chachamim came along and said, it's better if you go ahead and make the Kiddush on a cup of wine, but really, midaraisa, this is an important point because this is going to lead us into the next point, midaraisa, the original biblical command was just to make Kiddush, just to say something special about Shabbos. We said that the Rambam writes that Kiddush and Havdalah, both the bookends of Shabbos on both directions, are considered part of one mitzvah of Zachar Es Yom HaShabbos LeKadosho. How can that be that Havdalah is part of the mitzvah of Kiddush? How does that have anything to do with Kiddush? And the answer is that the Rambam understands that the whole point of Kiddush is to highlight that Kiddush, that Shabbos is a very special, very separate day. It's a separate entity from the rest of the week. And therefore, we assume that you have to highlight that at the both bookends of Shabbos. So you do it, number one, at the beginning with Kiddush, number two, at the end with Havdalah, to show that Shabbos is highlighted from every other day of the week. It's not the same. And therefore, the Rambam writes that Kiddush and Havdalah are both subsumed under one category, under one mitzvah. Then we just got into a whole discussion last week, I hope that was interesting, about mitzvah saseisha hazman grama. When are women responsible to be mekayim mitzvahs? When are women not obligated to be mekayim the mitzvahs? And we discussed the exceptions to the rule, and Kiddush being one of them, that even though Kiddush is a time-bound mitzvah, even though Kiddush should be something that women should not have an obligation to fulfill, however, we assume that Kiddush is an exception to the rule. And why is that? Because we learn from a pasuk. It says, Zachar es Yom HaShabbos LeKadosho in the first Luchos, in Parshas Yisro. Then in the Parshas Va'aschanan, when we have the second set of Luchos, we are told, Shamar es Yom HaShabbos LeKadosho. Says the Gemara, Zachar v'shamar b'dibur echad nemru, masha'ein ha'peh yecholo ledaber, ve'ein ha'ozin yecholo l'shmo. It was an absolute miracle. It was something that we are not able to speak, and it's something that generally human beings are not able to hear. Two words at the same time, it doesn't make any sense. So therefore, the Gemara says there must be some very close connection between the two commandments of Zachar and Shamar. Zachar means all the positive commandments, Shamar means all the negative commandments, says the Gemara. The same way that every woman is obligated to keep to all the negative commandments of Shabbos, for example, you don't say that a woman's allowed to be Mechala Shabbos, she's not allowed to turn on the lights on Shabbos just because it's a mitzvah saseisha hazman grama. Why is that? Because we assume any negative commandment a woman is obligated to fulfill, just like every man is. So too, says the Gemara, all the positive commandments of Shabbos as well would also be included for the women as well. So we spoke about that, and we spoke about the women's obligation also, which many don't know. Women have the same obligation as men to eat three meals on Shabbos. Many people are not careful about this, and they don't eat shalosh shudos, as we call it. They don't eat the third meal, but that's really not proper. And there are two reasons given why women have to eat shalosh shudos. Number one, some Rishonim say, the Ran writes in Masechet Shabbos, that the reason why women have to eat three meals on Shabbos is because the whole reason why we eat three meals on Shabbos is based, patterned off of the man. And we know that af hein hayu ba'osa hanes. The women were also included in that miracle of the man. And since they were also included, and now we're making some sort of remembrance to that miracle of the man, so then the women have to make that remembrance as well, because they also benefited from that tremendous miracle of having been provided the man in the Midbar. This is similar to what we find, let's say, by Neres Chanukah. Why are women obligated to light Neres Chanukah the same way men are? Because af hein hayu ba'osa hanes. The whole point of Neres Chanukah is to remember the tremendous miracle that happened in the times of Chanukah and the times of the Chashmonaim. So therefore, the women were just as positively impacted by that miracle as we were, as the men were. So therefore, we assume that women have to follow that obligation of Neres Chanukah the same way men do. We find this in another context by Dalet Kosos on Leil HaSeder. Women have to keep to that mitzvah of drinking Dalet Kosos on Leil HaSeder. Why is that? Because the whole point of Dalet Kosos Leil HaSeder is because af hein hayu ba'osa hanes. We're trying to remember the fact that we were all taken out of Mitzrayim, so we have that opportunity to remember it on the night of the Seder. So we spoke about all of that last week. However, other Rishonim say the reason why women have to eat three meals on Shabbos has nothing to do with af hein hayu ba'osa hanes. Rather, it's because kol sheyeshno b'shamar Yeshno Bezachar. Any woman that has an obligation to keep to the negative commandments of Shabbos also has an obligation to keep to the positive commandments of Shabbos. And therefore, the same way a woman is not allowed to be Mechala Shabbos, so too she must also make sure to eat three meals on Shabbos, because that is part of the positive commandment that we are asked to do on Shabbos. And now let's move a little bit further. The Magen Avraham has a very interesting discussion. We started this morning, just a couple of minutes ago, by speaking about what is the biblical obligation as far as Kiddush is concerned. As we know, the Sefer HaChinuch told us, we learned this 2 weeks ago, we just reviewed it. Sefer HaChinuch says the original biblical obligation was not to recite Kiddush on a cup of wine. You did not need a cup of wine. You were able to recite Kiddush on your own. So what exactly does that mean? Well, says the Magen Avraham, all you have to say is some sort of praise of Shabbos, Shivcha de Shabbata, as he says it. You have to say some praise about how special Shabbos is, and that would suffice to take care of my requirement of reciting Kiddush every Shabbos. Well, says the Magen Avraham like this. We go to shul, and we daven Shmona Esrei on Friday night. And in the middle of the Shmona Esrei, we say all sorts of wonderful things about Shabbos. Says the Magen Avraham, really, you already have fulfilled your mitzvah of Kiddush once you recited Shmona Esrei on Friday night. Make sense? Then, when you come home, you recite Kiddush on a cup of wine. Why? Because the Chachamim instituted that not only do you have to say Kiddush mid ha-Torah, not only do you have to say Kiddush with words, but you also should do it on a cup of wine. But really, strictly speaking, says the Magen Avraham, you have already fulfilled your biblical requirement when you went to shul and you daven. Even if you didn't go to shul, but you daven at home, you have already fulfilled your biblical obligation of Kiddush by reciting the words that highlight the specialness of Shabbos in your Shmona Esrei. So now here's the problem. If you assume like the Magen Avraham, problem number one is as follows. We have a Gemara in Sechem Daf Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, that's number one on the sur sheet. Amar Avacha Bar Yaakov. Vitzarech Lahazkir Yitzias Mitzrayim B'Kiddush Hayom. There is an obligation. Not only do we have to highlight the specialness of Shabbos when we recite the Kiddush, but there's something extra special that we have to say in the Kiddush as well. And if we don't say this, if we don't incorporate this in part of the Kiddush, we are not fulfilling our obligation of Kiddush. What is that, says the Gemara? Tzarech Lahazkir Yitzias Mitzrayim B'Kiddush Hayom. Not only do we have to talk about Shabbos in the Kiddush, we also have to talk about Yitzias Mitzrayim. And this is why we say every Friday night, Zecher Yitzias Mitzrayim. Now the question is, just parenthetically, so we understand, Zecher Yitzias Mitzrayim, on Pesach we say it, on Shavuos we say it, on Sukkot we say it, right? That makes a lot of sense to us, no? On Pesach we say it, that's when we came out of Mitzrayim. On Shavuos we say it because the whole point of coming out of Mitzrayim was Kabbalah Satorah, so we say it on Shavuos. On Sukkot we say it because, as we know, the whole Sukkot is to remind us of that experience when we came out of Mitzrayim and we were sitting in the huts in the desert. Okay, makes a lot of sense that in the Kiddush, on Pesach, on Shavuos, and on Sukkot, we recite the words Zecher Liyitzias Mitzrayim. What about Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur coming up? Do we say Zecher Liyitzias Mitzrayim on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? I won't look around. The answer is yes. We say Zecher Liyitzias Mitzrayim on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Why is that? What does Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur have to do with Yitzias Mitzrayim? We didn't have Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur in Mitzrayim. It wasn't given to us when we left Mitzrayim. So what exactly is this Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Zecher Liyitzias Mitzrayim? What is that about? So my father once explained to me a very beautiful interpretation that he thought of on his own. And that goes as follows. Perhaps even on Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, and Shabbos, when we say Zecher Liyitzias Mitzrayim, it doesn't mean what you think. We think we say Zecher Liyitzias Mitzrayim because Pesach is when we came out of Mitzrayim. Shavuos was what Yitzias Mitzrayim led up to. Sukkot is to remind us of that experience. No. You know what Zecher Liyitzias Mitzrayim is? The Zecher Liyitzias Mitzrayim is highlighting something else. When we came out of Mitzrayim, the first mitzvah we were given, the first opportunity we were given when we left Mitzrayim was what? HaChodesh Azelachem Rosh Chadashim. What does that mean? That God gave us the opportunity to actually infuse Kedusha into the days of the week. God came to us and said, you have the power now to say that today is going to be Rosh Chodesh. You have the power to say that in 2 weeks is going to be Pesach. That is in your hands. That is the first mitzvah that God gave us when we came out of Mitzrayim. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. You are now empowered with the ability to give Kedusha to a day. When we came out of Mitzrayim, and why did that happen specifically then? Because an Eved, in Mitzrayim we were Avad and we were slaves. An Eved does not own his time. An Eved, a servant, a slave, is not allowed to do whatever he wants as he chooses. He has to follow the rules. He's not under his own auspices. He's under somebody else's rule. And therefore, the first thing that God wanted to highlight is, now that you came out of Mitzrayim, not only do you own your time, not only do you have the ability to do whatever you want at all times of the year, but you also have the ability to sanctify the days. You also have the ability not just to spend your days doing different things, but you have the ability to make them special, to make your experience every day of the week something elevated, something more extra special than what other people are doing during their week. And therefore, that's why God specifically gave us this mitzvah, B'chodesh HaZelachem, upon exiting Mitzrayim, on becoming free from the bondage, from the slavement in Mitzrayim. And therefore, when we say on Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Zechel Yetziyat Mitzrayim, what are we saying? We're not saying, remember that time when we came out of Mitzrayim and God gave us the Torah and God gave us Sukkot. No. We're saying, remember when we came out of Mitzrayim and God taught us that eternal lesson that we have the ability to be Mekadesh Lizmanim. That we have the ability to actually sanctify the days. And this is something that is appropriate to Pesach, to Sukkot, to Rosh Hashanah, to Yom Kippur, and to every single Shabbos. This is why we say Zechel Yetzias Mitzrayim. We remind ourselves of that ability that we were given, of that power that we have to actually infuse Kedusha into a day. So the Gemara says that you have to say Zechel Yetzias Mitzrayim in your Kiddush. Well, if that's the case, the problem is, how does the Magen Avraham tell us that one can already fulfill his obligation of saying Kiddush, of reciting Kiddush, when you say Shemona Esrei? Where's the Zechel Yetzias Mitzrayim there? So in our Kiddush on Friday night when we come home, we recite a whole Nusach of Kiddush, we say a whole paragraph, and in that paragraph we incorporate Zechel Yetzias Mitzrayim. But in the Shemona Esrei, if you're going to say that really we fulfill our biblical obligation of Kiddush just by reciting the Shemona Esrei, where's the Zechel Yetzias Mitzrayim in that reciting of Shemona Esrei? This is a major question that is asked against the Magen Avraham. Some want to suggest that maybe if you look through the davening on Friday night, so we say, let's say, an Emes Ve'emunah on Friday night after we recite the Shema, so we recite Emes Ve'emunah, and in that paragraph we say, Mi Mitzrayim Tana, we say things about how God took us out of Mitzrayim. Perhaps that's a way to get out of it. Okay, it's a major question. If anyone has any suggestions, I'm open to hear them. But this is what the Magen Avraham assumes, that really we are able to fulfill our obligation of Kiddush simply by reciting the Shemona Esrei on Friday night, because that already highlights the specialness of Shabbos. That's already Shivcha de Shabbat. So now let's go a little further. One of the commentaries on the side of the Magen Avraham, this is a commentary on the commentary. The Shulchan Aruch is in the middle of the page. Then you have the Magen Avraham is on the right side of the page. And then you have the Dagel Mirvava who's on the right side of the page, because he's making comments against the Magen Avraham, who's making comments against the Shulchan Aruch. So here we're three generations removed from the original Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. So says the Dagel Mirvava, if the Magen Avraham is correct, that really you're able to recite your Kiddush, you can fulfill your obligation by just saying Friday night Shemona Esrei, that's good enough, ask the Dagel Mirvava, we have a major, major problem. And that goes as follows. Problem is going to be like this. Very often, you'll tell me if this is true. So I happen to be a man. So a man has an obligation to go to shul and to daven with a minyan. So he's always going to do that. Women are very often busy, as we know, as we heard a few weeks ago, women are busy on Friday afternoons, and they don't always have a chance to daven Shemona Esrei, to daven Ma'ariv at night. Is that correct? I would imagine not everybody davens Friday night. How many people daven Shemona Esrei Friday night? So you're Nashim Tzidkanu, so you have extra time. But somebody who has, let's say, young children or grandchildren, somebody who's busy and trying to get the table set and trying to do all sorts of things, not everybody has a chance to actually daven Shemona Esrei on Friday night. So here's the problem, ask the Dagomer Vava. Let's say you're a couple, and generally the husband comes home from shul, and he recites Kiddush on behalf of the whole family, which we'll talk about soon. Should everybody say their own? Should one person say for everyone? We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But let's assume that one member of the household is going to recite Kiddush for everyone. So it's going to be the man, let's say. Could be the woman, but let's say the man is doing it. So the man has already fulfilled his obligation. Strictly speaking, he's fulfilled his obligation in shul already. Why? Because he davened Shemona Esrei. The woman has not davened Shemona Esrei yet. So what is she left with? She still has an obligation, Mida Araisa, to fulfill her commandment of Kiddush. Her husband already has fulfilled his commandment. She still has to do it. So now they come home. The husband comes home. He sits down by the table. He's about to make Kiddush. Is he able to be Motzi, his wife, in Kiddush? Yes? Why? That's okay, let's leave that out for now. How can a husband fulfill his wife's obligation if now he is no longer obligated to do it? His wife still has a biblical obligation. She hasn't done anything yet to show that Shabbos is highlighted, that Shabbos is special. The husband has already davened in shul. He's already fulfilled his commandment, his obligation. So how can he come home and make kiddush for his wife if he no longer is obligated to say kiddush? Yeah. So the candle is just ushered in the Shabbos, but kiddush, the point of kiddush is to say, I have to say with words that Shabbos is highlighted over any other day of the week. So the husband already did that in his Shemona Esrei in shul. But the wife hasn't davened Shemona Esrei. The woman of the house not always has a chance to daven. Well, this is the question. Ask the Dagal Mirvava. If you assume that the people can actually fulfill their obligation of kiddush just by reciting Shemona Esrei, then we have a major, major problem. How can you have a husband comes home from shul? How is he able to recite kiddush for his wife if, in fact, his wife is obligated to say the kiddush and he is no longer obligated? Amazing question. Anyone ever think of that? Yes. I can't hear. What? Okay, so let's just get into this for 1 second. So Rabbi Kiva Eger, who is a commentary on the commentary on the commentary. So if you're following, we started with the Shulchan Aruch, we went to the Magen Avraham, then we had the Dagal Mirvava who's commenting on the Magen Avraham, and now we have Rabbi Kiva Eger who's commenting on the Dagal Mirvava, and he says, well, I have a good idea. You know what? When a husband comes home from shul, aside from being a nice gentleman and saying good Shabbos to his wife, which is the right thing to do, Rabbi Kiva Eger says it's important that he says, good Shabbos, dear wife. Why is that important? Because this way, he's highlighting the specialness of Shabbos. And if his wife says, good Shabbos, dear, that would mean that now she has fulfilled her obligation of Kiddush as well. Well, says Rabbi Kiva Eger, that's a way to get out of the problem. The husband was able to fulfill his obligation by saying Shemona Esrei and Shul. What's going to be with his wife? What's going to be with his wife? Now we're going to sit down to Kiddush. She's obligated to say the Kiddush. He's not obligated to say the Kiddush anymore. He's only obligated midirabbanan. But a dirabbanan can't come and take care of a daraisa, so that doesn't make sense. So says Rabbi Kiva Eger, you know how to get out of the problem? When he comes home from shul, the first thing he should say to his wife before Kiddush is, good Shabbos, wife, or whoever she is. And by reciting the words, good Shabbos, that shows that Shabbos is somehow highlighted over the other days of the week. So this is Rabbi Kiva Eger's suggestion, which is an interesting one. I did see something which is fascinating. I'm curious if anyone has this practice. There are some Svardisha communities, not Nusach Svard, real Svardim, who have the practice when they light Shabbos candles, they say, Lahadik Ner Shel Shabbos Kodesh. Anyone have that practice? Yeah? Not just Lahadik Ner Shel Shabbos? So that was the first time I saw it was this week. So some communities have that practice. And the question is, where does it come from? Nowhere do we find that the nusach of the bracha is lahadik ner shel Shabbos kodesh. We know that Shabbos is Shabbos kodesh, but really the nusach of the bracha is lahadik ner shel Shabbos. Let's say I'm reciting a bracha, and I say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehyeh Bedvaroth, and I just start adding words to the bracha. Do I have a right to do that? No, because Chazal instituted a very specific way of how I'm supposed to recite my brachas, and nobody gave you a license to institute anything else. So why is it that this minhag has developed that we say lahadik ner shel Shabbos kodesh? Where does that come from? So this is a very interesting discussion that's had by some contemporary Svarim. And one sefer that I saw suggests the following. Perhaps the reason why women began to add an extra word of Shabbos Kodesh to that bracha, Lahadik Ner Shel Shabbos, is to highlight the specialness of Shabbos. It's to get out of this problem. When a woman goes and lights her Shabbos candles and ushers in the Shabbos, she's not just going to say Lahadik Ner Shel Shabbos. She's going to say Lahadik Ner Shel Shabbos Kodesh. Why? Because I have an obligation to make Kiddush. I have an obligation to highlight the fact that Shabbos is more special than any other day of the week. How am I going to do that? If I add on that one extra word at the end of my bracha and I say, Lahadik Ner Shel Shabbos Kodesh, then now I'm pretty good to go. Now I've already highlighted the fact that Shabbos is very special. And perhaps now you get out of that problem. When the husband comes home from shul, hey, I was already Mekabel Shabbos. I already said Shabbos Kodesh also. I'm okay, even if you don't want to say good Shabbos to me. Right, if you're like Rabbi Kiva Eger, you don't want to say good Shabbos to me. Still, perhaps that would be good enough to take care of the problem. Another way out of the problem would be as follows. The Chassam Sofer writes in his Tshuva, very famously, he suggests that when the Chachamim institute something and they tell us what is the most optimal way to fulfill an obligation that we have. For example, in our case over here, yes, you can be Mekayim, you can fulfill your obligation by reciting Kiddush. in the Shemona Esrei. That's good enough, because you're highlighting the fact that Shabbos is special, Shabbos is different. However, says the Chasam Sofer, if the Chachamim came along later on and said the best way to do it is not only by saying it in Shemona Esrei, but doing it on a cup of wine, then it's as if you had implicit kavana, it's as if you had in mind when you said your Shemona Esrei that you don't want to be Yotzi your Mitzvah of Kiddush in Shemona Esrei, and you want to wait till later, till you get home, and you recite the Kiddush on a cup of wine, which is the real way to do it, then it's as if you had in mind that you don't want to be Yotzi in the Shemona Esrei, you only want to be Yotzi later on when you get home. And if that would be the case, then we would assume that there's no problem at all, because if that's the implicit kavana of each individual who recites Shemona Esrei on Friday night, then when everybody gets home and says Kiddush together on the cup of wine, we assume everyone is on the same field. Everyone is ready to be mekayim the mitzvah together equally, and there's nobody who has fulfilled their obligation as of yet. Is that clear? Yes. That's a great question. So most of the times, we are Mekabel Shabbos when it's Ayat Shabbos. A lot of times, women are Mekabel Shabbos afterward, because if a woman davens Friday night, she's generally Mekabel Shabbos when she lights the candles. And then the Kabbalah Shabbos that she recites is afterwards. So you are 100% correct. For a man, that generally would not work, because for a man, he's not Mekabel Shabbos till Mizmor Shir. So the Kabbalah Shabbos that you did was really before. That's what I think. For a woman, you're okay. For a woman, you're okay. It's a good suggestion. I like it. But again, that's all assuming that you have time to daven. I assume many women are too busy and really don't have a chance. And I think it's important to notice as well, the Shulchan Aruch does write in Siman Reishayin Aleph and Hilchos Kiddush a very, very important halacha to keep in mind, and that is, once Shabbos has come in, one is not allowed to eat or drink anything until they recite Kiddush on a cup of wine. Now this is very, very important. The Shulchan Aruch writes, one is not even allowed to have a cup of water, which is surprising. What's so bad about a cup of water? But still, the Shulchan Aruch writes, one is not allowed to eat or drink anything until they recite Kiddush on Friday night. And therefore, we have to be careful about this, because sometimes you're rushing, sometimes you're doing things, and you go and you light your candles, then you say, okay, I'll take a drink afterward. That's really not supposed to be the case, because Kiddush is what gives us the allowance to eat on Friday night. So this is something to keep in mind as well. Let's look a little bit further. I saw a beautiful passage this week that Rav Shamsham Rafal Hirsch writes in his Siddur, when he talks about the halacha of reciting Kiddush, and very often Rav Shamsham Rafal Hirsch gives beautiful ideas of his own to try and explain the reasons behind mitzvahs are, what the feelings are supposed to be. So over here, Rav Shamsham Rafal Hirsch strikes again, and he writes beautifully, what are we supposed to be having in mind? Why is it that we have, again, if we can recite the Kiddush in Shemona Esrei, if we can recite the Kiddush, like you said, by saying L'chunu Ranana, by saying L'chadodi, by saying wonderful things about Shabbos, then why is it that we have to go ahead and say it again when we get home? What's that all about? Why can't we just fulfill that obligation in Shul itself? So we said the halachic reason is, like the Sefer HaChinuch explained, because we want you to do it on a cup of wine, to try to encourage yourself, to be excited about what you're doing. And since we know that we're excited over a cup of wine, so that's a good thing to do. However, Rav Hirsch gives his own reason here, and I think it's a beautiful explanation. Let's read it together. This is the highlight of the picture. Okay? So Rav Hirsch writes as follows. Zechor es Yom HaShabbos dekatsho. Ein ha-kosev ba ela l'chayiv es Yisrael shelo l'shkoach es Yom HaShabbos. The pasuk over here is coming to tell us, don't forget, Zechor es Yom HaShabbos dekatsho, don't forget about keeping the laws of Shabbos. Kederach shahamin ha-anushi shachach oso. Don't be like everybody else who has forgotten about sanctity in their lives. Don't be like everyone else in the world who has forgotten that there's a time in the week when you can slow down, when you can actually think about what you're doing, when you can actually have an appreciation of your family, when you can sit together and have a meal, and Shabbos is the time to do that. Chova aleinu b'chol pam, sheyom haShabbos magia. We have an obligation every time that the seventh day of the week comes. Lahazkir es yiudo kikodesh bikarbano, bikirbenu. We have an obligation to say that Shabbos is very special. Shabbos is something which is unique. Lanu ulachal asher lanu. Even though we have already highlighted the special significance of Shabbos in our davening when we went to shul, so why do we have to go ahead and do it again, asked Rav Hirsch? What's the point of that? Shabbos is waiting for the sanctity. Says Rav Hirsch, Shabbos is waiting for something which is more important than what you just did in shul. Sheyavo lahakara mechaye beseinu. That is such a powerful statement. Rav Hirsch writes There are some Jews who think that Judaism stays in shul. I do my mitzvahs. I go to shul 3 times a day. I do my thing. I go to shul Shabbos morning. I do what I'm supposed to do. I'm part of my Chevra Kadisha club. I'm part of the Bikur Cholim club. I'm part of all the different mitzvahs that I do. And he says so often we forget that the ultimate Kedusha must be brought back into our own home. We cannot forget that Judaism is not just when we're in public. Judaism is not just when we go to shul and act like everybody else to be part of the community. We have to bring that Kedusha back into our own home and infuse all of the lessons, all of the values that we've learned together with our community. We need to bring that back and actually sanctify our own homes. And that, says Rav Hirsch, is why we have the obligation on Friday night not only to say the Kiddush and Shul to highlight the specialness of Shabbos, but also to bring it back into our own homes. Sanctify your home. Sit down on Friday night and the first thing you're going to do is be Mekadesh Shabbos in your house. Why is that? Because you want to teach your family that the home is the ultimate place of sanctity. It doesn't matter what you do in public. It doesn't matter that you're part of all the chesed groups and all the wonderful things that you're doing. But what do you do when you're behind closed doors? How do you act when nobody else is looking? Do you believe that your house is really a special place to be? You know, there's a famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where the Mishnah tells us, "Al tadin es chavercha ad shetagilim komo." And the simple understanding of that Mishnah is, you should not judge other people until you know their personal situation. Why is that? Because you never know what they're going through. You don't know if somebody's sick at home. You don't know if the children are having all sorts of problems. You don't know if there's a learning disability. You have no idea what kind of challenges that person is dealing with. And you don't know why they got angry at you in the supermarket. It might not be you. Don't judge a person until you really know what's going on. And I can tell you, as a rabbi, you never know what's going on. You really never know what's going on until you know a person very well. And it's very difficult. And says the Mishnah, we should never judge other people until you know exactly what's happening. And since we will never know what's happening, it's very hard to ever pass judgment. But some want to explain, "Al tadin es chavercha ad shetagilim komo" means something entirely different. You want to really figure out how to know what a person is really about? You want to figure out how to measure what kind of person this person that you're looking at really is? "Al tadin es chavercha," if you want to really get a good interpretation of what your friend is, "tagilim komo." Go to their house. Go see how they act when they're not in public. Go see how this man talks to his wife when nobody else is looking. Go see how this woman talks to her children when they're not in public. Do they always get frustrated at each other? Are they yelling? Is there screaming in the house? If you really want to know the measure of a person, you want to really figure out what a person is all about, come to their house. Come to the privacy of their home and let's see. Are they really as good as they pretend to be out in public? You know, it's said in the name of the Kutzker, a beautiful insight, that you look after we got Kabbalah Satorah, if we went through that experience. Somebody complained to me last week, actually. They feel it's not right that in the middle of the shiur, we say some hashkafa here and there. Does it bother anybody here? It was somebody online who sent me an email. It's a terrible thing. How can you... mixing halacha and hashkafa? I don't know. To me, I think it's fine. If it bothers anyone, you can tune out. So the Kutzker writes, yeah, it's a tough audience out there. I told them they're welcome not to listen. It's okay. So the Kutzker writes a beautiful insight. We had Kabbalah Satorah, 613 mitzvahs, very big experience, everything was wonderful. What happens? What's the first commandment that we're given after Kabbalah Satorah? You would think the first thing God tells us after Kabbalah Satorah, after Maariv Minhag Sinai, is what? Go home and kosher your kelim. Go home and buy kosher food. Well, now you just found out about the laws of Basar B'Chalav. Now you just found out about all the laws of kashrus. Everything you have in your house is treif. You better go home and quick, go kosher the kitchen. No, that should be the first thing that we were told, but it's not. What is the first thing that we were told? The first commandment we were given on the completion of Kabbalah Satorah, Maariv Minhag Sinai, what was it? Shuvu lachem le'ahaleichem. Go back to your homes. And why is that, says the Kutzker? Because you can have all these wonderful experiences of Kabbalah Satorah, of Maariv Minhag Sinai, and Moshe Rabbeinu, and God comes to talk to you by himself, and everything's great, and you're together with your community. Now God tells you, I have a bigger challenge for you. Shuvu lachem le'ohaleichem. Go back to your own home, and let's see. How are you going to translate everything I just gave you to the privacy of your own home when nobody else is looking? How are you going to act with your spouse when nobody else is there? How are you going to treat your children when nobody else is watching you? Are you going to be respectful? How are you going to keep my mitzvahs when nobody else is looking over your shoulder to see what you're doing? How are you going to be looking on the internet when nobody else is watching you? This is what God says, the first commandment we've been given after Kabbalah Satorah is, Shuvu lachem la'aleichem. Go back to your own homes and let's see if you can translate the values of the Torah into the privacy of your own home. And it's so important, says the Kutzker, it's more important than the experience of Kabbalah Satorah itself, because that's a much more difficult challenge. It's very easy when we have peer pressure to do things right. But let's see when nobody else is watching how we come through. There's a fascinating Medrash Tanchuma. When Avraham Avinu, we know Avraham Avinu is called the Isha Chesed. Why is he called the Isha Chesed? If I would have asked anyone on the street, any first grader, why is Avraham Avinu called the Isha Chesed? Hachnas Asorchim, he had the big tent, he's letting everybody in, he's always feeding everyone food, he's wonderful, he's being Megayer people, he's running a Kiruv organization, he's amazing, Avraham Avinu, right? So you'll say, that's why he's called the Isha Chesed. Listen to this Medrash. Amar Avraham Vedivik B'Medias HaChesed. Avraham Avinu, I didn't put it on here, but Avraham Avinu is clinging to the Midas HaChesed. Avraham Avinu is the one who's the quintessential Mr. Chesed man. He's on every committee, he's doing everything right. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Sheli Haisa Midah Hazo. Who do you think you are? I'm the one who was the Chesed man, God says to him. You stole this from me. Okay. Va'ata Eschazeba Chayecha, because you have emulated my way, because you have gone ahead and taken over this Midas HaChesed, God, where do we find that God did chesed? Well, he does chesed to us all the time. So God says, because you followed in my ways, therefore I'm going to pay you back. And the pasuk says, I'm sorry, the Medrash says that God gave him some sort of atara on his head. Why is that? Says the Medrash. Maksiv lamala min ha'inyan. How do we know that Avraham Avinu is an isha chesed? Because it says, v'acharei kein, kavar Avraham es sara ishto. Amad v'nitval ba. How do we know that Avraham Avinu is an Isha Chesed? I would have said, because he has an open tent, because he's always inviting people to his house. No. How we know that he's an Isha Chesed is when the Pasuk says, Ba'acharei kein kavar Avraham es sara ishto. Avraham Avinu, after his wife passes away, goes and gets his hands dirty, and buries his wife with his own two hands. That's how we know that Avraham Avinu is an Isha Chesed. And this is shocking. Avraham Avinu, at this point, how old was he when Sarah died? 100 years old. He spent 100 years of his life inviting people into his home, spending all of his money, spending all of his energies to take care of other people. But no, that doesn't make him an Isha Chesed. What makes him an Isha Chesed, says the Medrash, is when he's sensitive enough to take care of the needs of his wife and not ask other people to do it. Because that's what Chesed's all about. When a person understands that the privacy of their home is the most important value in life. And that's so much more difficult sometimes than to be out in public and doing wonderful things when you get recognition. When you don't get recognition, when you're at home and nobody else is watching, it's just the couple themselves, it's just the family unit by itself, trying to get along and trying to make sure that everybody's happy and trying to be respectful and sensitive to one another, that's how we know that Avraham Avinu becomes an Isha Chesed. There's a very frightening passage by Reb Chaim Vital. Reb Chaim Vital was one of the Talmidim of the Ari HaKadosh. He says, Yeshnam b'nei adam, asher meitivam im zulasam. We have plenty of people out there who do chesed for everybody else. Va'osim chesedim acherim, they're running to always be on Hatzalah, they're doing all these great things, and I'm not limiting it, it's great. Ulam, however, he says, I'm reading his language, im nishoseim uvnei beisam, einam meitivim. With their own wives and their own children, they don't bother to give them the time of the day. They don't bother to actually care about them. And they're relying on the Yom Achron, which is when you get up to Shamayim. And you think, yeah, you spent your whole life being wonderful to other people. You think, well, I'm going to get upstairs and they're going to let me right in. What do you mean? Look what a wonderful life I lived. Look how gracious I was to people. Oh boy, do I feel bad for them when they get upstairs, says Reb Chaim Vital. Oy lahem v'oy lenafsham, ki lo yedu v'lo yavinu. Because they have no understanding. Shakol maisei hachesed shelahem, that every act of kindness that they did in their own lives, hevel ure'us ruach, it is meaningless and it is nothing in the eyes of God. Ki b'roshav arishona, because the first thing we need to focus on is, yesh la'adam lasos chesed im ishto ubanav ubnei beiso. The first thing that we need to focus on, we always say chesed starts in the home. But here, says Reb Chaim Vital, it's more than just a cliche. if we don't understand that our homes are the first place that we need to focus on, then everything else that we do is hevel ureus ruach. Everything else that we do is meaningless, is worthless, and we will not be led into Gan Eden, even though we've done what we think is so many wonderful acts in our lives. Frightening statement. Frightening statement from the student of the Ari HaKadosh. And this, I believe, is what Rav Hirsch is telling us. We have this mitzvah to say Kiddush on Friday night. And we have that mitzvah, Rav Hirsch says, not only to recite the Kiddush in Shul, not only to say it in our Shmona Esrei and bring in and usher in the Shabbos and show how highlighted Shabbos is in our lives, but it's so much more than that. We have a deeper obligation, which is to go ahead and to sanctify our own homes, to bring the Kiddush into our homes. Like the Kutzker said, Shuvu lachem la'aleichem. Right after the experience of Kabbalah Satara, yeah, you're inspired. Well, let's see what you do with it. Let's see when you come home, if you can really translate all of those values and all of those lessons that you've learned to make your home a more sanctified place. So now let's go a little bit further. We have a discussion. Many people have asked, what is the proper minhag to do on Friday night? Should one person recite the Kiddush? Or should each person recite on their own? Now, there are many different practices when it comes to this question. I just want to try to explain what the different practices are about. So we begin with the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Lamed Ches Amud Beis, where the Gemara tells us a halacha of Shomea Ka'ona, which means, when you go to shul, does each person say the Kriyas HaTorah on their own? No. We listen to the Baal Kori recite the Kriyas HaTorah. How is that good enough? If the mitzvah is Kriyas HaTorah, you have to read the Torah. Well, I'm not reading the Torah. We come to shul on Mikra Megillah. We come to shul on Purim night. Does everybody recite the Megillah on their own? No. You have one person's the Baal Kore. How can I be Yotze with the Baal Kore? Why is that good enough? If I have a chiv of Mikra Megillah, so why am I getting out of my obligation by listening to somebody else? What? Okay. So you're saying the bracha is good enough. Right, so a bracha obviously gets you involved, but you don't even recite the bracha. Right? Do you recite the bracha on Purim night? You say amen, but the Baal Kori is doing everything. So how could it be considered my Megillah? How could it be considered my Kriyas HaTorah? What am I doing? The answer is, says the Gemara, we have a principle called Shomea Ka'ona, which means somebody who's listening with intent to actually have in mind to want to be Yotze with the person who's reading, it's as if Ke'ona, Shomea, somebody who's listening is Ke'ona. It's as if I'm saying on my own. It's not that I'm just a Shomea. It's as if I'm uttering it with my own lips myself. And therefore we assume based on that halacha, this is why you can have one Baal Kori reciting the Kriyas HaTorah for all of us. This is why you can have one person reciting the Megillah for everybody. This is why we have a halacha that shows up all over the place, that one person can do it, and all of us can listen along, and that will be considered the halacha of Shomea Ka'ona. We all fulfill our obligation. Now, when it comes to some issues, to some mitzvahs, we don't allow Shomea Ka'ona. For example, there's a big discussion, the Ritva in Megillah, Daf Beis, has a big discussion whether we should assume that one would be able to be in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema every day with Shomea Ka'ona. Let's say I just had a surgery on my throat, I'm not able to say the words, so can I listen to somebody else say the Kriya Shema and fulfill my obligation of reciting Kriya Shema every day? So you'll say, why not? Why should Kriya Shema be any different than Mikra Megillah on Leil Purim? Why should Kriya Shema be any different than laying the Torah every Shabbos? Why should this be any different than that? The answer is, Kriya Shema is not the same. And why is that? Because Kriya Shema requires something more than just the utterance of the words. What does it require? Kriya Shema is Kabbalas O Malchus Shamayim. Means, I need to understand when I say the words of Kriya Shema that I am accepting God's presence in my life. V'hayim Shamoa is Kabbalas O Mitzvahs. I am accepting when I say the words of V'hayim Shamoa. If you look in our Art Scroll Siddur, it always says Yechavin. Should have in mind that now when I say the paragraph of V'hayim Shamoa, I should have in mind that now I am accepting all the mitzvahs upon myself. When I say Shema, I'm accepting the O Malchus Shamayim on myself. And therefore, since there's something more that's required when we recite the Shema and V'hayim Shamoa, not just a recital with words, but it's something that we have to think about as well. Therefore, I cannot fulfill that obligation by listening to somebody else. That somebody else can only tell me the words, but over here, it's more than just words. Over here, we need to do something more. Let's say you come to Mikra Megillah. You don't have to think anything when you're learning the Megillah. All you have to do is listen to the words, recite the words, and that's good enough. So that's why we assume Shomea Ka'ona would work. However, in this case, let's say by Kriya Shema, we have other examples which would be an exception, we would assume that it doesn't work. So what's the story with Kiddush on Friday night? So the story is, the same way we find the halacha of Shomea Ka'ona everywhere else, we assume Shomea Ka'ona would work when, with regard to Kiddush on Friday night as well. And therefore, if one person recites the Kiddush on behalf of everybody else, that would be sufficient, that would be good enough to fulfill their obligation. And in fact, it's better that one person should recite for everybody else. Why? Because we have a Gemara in Brachos on Daf Nun Gimel that tells us as follows. Let's look at number 3 on the source sheet. Number Gimel. Tana Rabbanan. So this Gemara is describing the situation on Matzah Shabbos when we have to recite Havdalah. So it used to be, everybody recited Havdalah. We're talking about a boys' yeshiva here. So the Gemara says all the boys were sitting in yeshiva, and not everybody has their own Kiddush. Not everyone has their own wine. They couldn't afford it. So one person stands up in the front of the room and he makes Havdalah for everybody. Now, what about the Besamim? What about Bari Mari Ha'esh? So the Gemara has a discussion. Should each person make their own bracha on the Besamim, or should one person make for everybody else? So let's see. Says the Gemara, Tana Rabbanan. Let's say everybody's sitting together in the yeshiva on Matzah Shabbos, and there are a bunch of poor yeshiva guys, and nobody has money to have their own havdalah. So one person's making havdalah for everybody. So says the Gemara, Hevi lahem ur. Now somebody walks into the room. Oh, I found a candle. Now we can make havdalah. Beis Shammai Omrim, Beis Shammai say, Kol echad be'echad yivarech la'atzmo. Each person should make the bracha of Bori Mari Ha'esh by himself. Why is that? What do you mean? If we make one communal havdalah, why should each person make the bracha of Bori Mari Ha'esh by himself? It's not what we do at home. So let's see. Beis Hillel Omrim, echad mevarech l'kula. Beis Hillel say, it's better that one person should stand up, a chazan should stand up and say the Kiddush, say the havdalah for everybody. And say the Bori Mari Ha'esh, one bracha, everybody will listen. Why? Shenemar, pasuk in Mishlei, Berov Am Hadras Melech. Which means, the more people you have doing something together, the more enhanced the mitzvah actually is. Now, it's just interesting to point out, there are three cases in the Gemara where you have Berov Am Hadras Melech, and they're not the same. Berov Am Hadras Melech means different things in different places. Let's take, for example, like this. You have this Gemara which says, Berov Am Hadras Melech. So what's happening? Everybody in the room has an obligation to recite Havdalah. So, instead of each person making a bracha on their own, may as well have one person represent all of us. That's Berov Am Hadras Melech. We're all being yotzei our mitzvah at one time. We have a second application. That's a Gemara in Pesachim, where the Gemara says that they used to have long lines of people on Erev Pesach would come to Shechter Karban Pesach in the Beis HaMikdash, and imagine what it looked like. You have people running back and forth, bringing Karban Pesach and sprinkling the blood, and it's crazy. So the Gemara says, you know what, they realized it's going to be too much pandemonium, so they made a line of Kohanim that went from the place where the animal was shechted, a line straight to the Mizbeach, and then a line back. What were these lines for? Because after an animal is shechted in the Beis HaMikdash, you have to accept the blood in a vessel, in a kli sharis, and that blood has to be brought to the Mizbeach and sprinkled on the Mizbeach. So, instead of having a kohen shecht an animal, then go run to the Mizbeach and try to spill it on the Mizbeach, but meanwhile he's going to trip on somebody's feet, he's going to slip on something on the floor, not a good idea, says the Gemara, you know what? We're going to have each person's going to be an assembly line. So the Gemara says each person would pass the bucket to the next one, to the next one, to the next one, till the last guy got to the Mizbeach, he poured it on, and then they would pass the bucket back the other way and bring it back to the person who originally started the line. Okay? Says the Gemara, not only was this an efficient way to do it, because we know that an assembly line actually works, but the Gemara says it was also a good idea because Berov Am Hadras Melech, which means that everybody should have a little part of a greater mitzvah. That's a second application of Berov Am Hadras Melech, which is not the same as the first. The first one is, when I have an obligation, and we all have an obligation that we need to fulfill an entire mitzvah, the best way to do it is that one person should do it on behalf of all of us to fulfill our entire obligation. The second application is, when you have one big, long mitzvah that needs to be done, we should have as many people involved as possible in taking a little piece of that mitzvah. So therefore we make an assembly line, and everyone gets to take a little turn to have a chance to be involved. That's the second case we have it. And the third place we have it is a totally different Gemara, Yuma Daf Ayin, if I'm not mistaken. The Gemara says as follows. We have a Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. We know the highlight of Yom Kippur was when the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but that wasn't the only highlight of Yom Kippur. Then we had a Kohen Gadol who also used to read Hakel once every 7 years. Right? He used to read Parshios and Chumash when all of the Jewish people would come together. Now says the Gemara, when Kohen Gadol used to read it, they would make sure to have as many people as possible waiting there to watch him read the Parsha from the Sefer Torah. Why? What does that have to do with me? It's the Kohen Gadol's mitzvah. Says the Gemara, Berov Am Hadras Melech. What do you see from here? You see a third factor. that when you're doing your own mitzvah and it's nothing to do with anybody else, it's best to do that mitzvah in the public in front of other people. Even though they have no part in your mitzvah at all. Even though they're not participants at all. Let's say I'm lighting my neighbor's Shabbos. It's good to do it with all my children around. That's what you see from the Gemara. Berovam Hadras Melech takes on a third meaning in that Gemara, which is very interesting. So here we have the first simple understanding of Berovam Hadras Melech. For those that didn't follow that little middle part, the simple part of Berovam Hadras Melech is, when you have everybody who has to fulfill an entire mitzvah, it's better that one person should do it on behalf of all of us. So the question asked the Gemara is, so why does Beis Shammai disagree? Again, the Gemara here is describing a situation where it's Matzah Shabbos, all the poor yeshiva guys are sitting, learning in the Beis Medrash, somebody runs in with a candle, okay, it's time to make Avdalah. So what do we do? Beis Shammai says, well, you should pass it around, each person should make his own bracha. Beis Hillel say, no, why would he do that? Berovam Hadras Melech. Why wouldn't you have one person make the bracha on behalf of everybody, and that will be better? That will enhance our fulfillment of the mitzvah for all of us. So says Beis Shammai, no, not a good idea. You know why? Because the poor yeshiva guys are sitting and learning. So what's going to happen? One person is going to make a bari mari ha'esh. What's going to happen? The candle's in the middle of the room. We have 1,000 people in the room. So everybody's going to have to start clamoring to go get to the candle, to see their fingers, to see the fingertips and everything. It's going to be such a mess, it's going to waste time from learning. So Beis Shammai says, not a good idea, because it's going to waste an extra minute from their learning if they're going to have to start walking to the middle of the room to do the Havdalah. So you know what? We're going to pass the candle around, and each boy is going to make his own bracha on his own. This way, he won't waste any time. Make a quick bracha, pass it to the next guy, and you move on with life. That's what Beis Shammai says. But in principle, Beis Shammai would agree that what? If you didn't have this consideration of learning, let's say the guys were playing ball outside, and now we come with a Havdalah candle, and we say, oh, it's time to make Havdalah. Beis Shammai would agree as well that it's better to go ahead and have one person recite for everybody. So what you see is from this Gemara that we have a concept of Berovam Hadras Melech, and we paskin in Shulchan Aruch Siman Reish Tzadi Ches, that the best thing to do is, when you have a situation like this, for one person to recite on behalf of everybody is the better thing to do. So why is it that we find many people have the practice not to? Many people, let's say, certainly anyone who comes from Hasidisha family has the practice that each member of the family will recite their own Kiddush. Anyone have that practice here? No? Thank you. I'm going to get the email from the person online. So why is it that many families have the practice that each member of the family says on their own, or, you know, all the males of the family, all whatever. You have many different practices and many different variations, but why is that? If we find this concept that Berovam Hadras Melech, and everybody agrees that we have a concept of Berovam Hadras Melech, here it's just a detailed machlokas, maybe, because Nebuch, the yeshiva guys, are going to waste time from the learning to go and get up and that. But otherwise, everybody would agree. So why do we find that some people have the practice by Kiddush that every member of the family says on their own? So the answer is as follows. You look in number Dalid, we have a Rush. The Rush is one of the Rishonim. And this Rush is quoted the Halacha in the Shulchan Aruch and Simen Nun Tes. So the Rush writes as follows. Birchas Yotzer Or. How come? Asked the Rush. Simple question. You have a Shliach Tzibur who stands up every day to daven. So, says the Rush, davening just became very easy. I don't have to say anything. No need to buy Sidurim. Everybody just listen to the Chazan, and he'll say everything for me. No need to recite Birchas Yotzer Or, which is Birchas Kriya Shema. Why should he say it? The Chazan will say it, we'll all listen, and we'll be Yotzer with Shomei Ka'ona. It's good enough. And Berovam Hadras Melech, isn't it a good idea to have one person recite on behalf of all of us? So great, let's throw out all the Sidurim here. We'll come to Shul on Shabbos. We'll all listen carefully, no talking in Shul. And the Chazan's going to say all the words. We're just going to listen, and that's great. Says the Rush, how come nobody does that? Life would be much easier. How come nobody does that? Says the Rush as follows. Birchas Yotzer Or, Omer Ani, Im HaShliach Tzibur Balachash. When the Shliach Tzibur gets up and he recites the Birchas Kriya Shema, I make sure to say the words along with the Shliach Tzibur. I don't rely on listening to him. And why is that? Mipnei She'ein Adam Yachal Lechabin Tadir B'Shtika Im HaShliach Tzibur. Seriously, how long is our attention span in this generation? For those who are in my generation in this room, it's about maybe 30 seconds. Maybe. For those who are, you know, from a generation before me, maybe 5-6 minutes. But seriously, how long, says the Rush, how long can you have someone, how long can you expect someone to pay attention? It's not going to happen. So he says, since the Birchas Kriya Shema is so long, so we're concerned that people aren't going to be able to pay attention for that long. So therefore we decided that everybody has to say it on their own. Even though we're losing out on this wonderful idea of Berovam Hadras Melech, but the other consequence in the other direction is worse, because people won't be able to pay attention for the entirety of the bracha, And therefore he says it's better that everyone should say on their own, and we lose that on Berov HaMatzos Melech, too bad. Similarly, we find in Hilchos Birchos HaMazon, Shulchan Aruch writes in Hilchos Birchos HaMazon from the Shibalei HaLeket, one of the Rishonim, that we have the practice that each person benches on their own. Each person says the entirety of the benching on their own. And why is that? Well, we have a hard enough time looking at a bencher, saying the benching on our own, paying attention. It's very hard for us. So how would you imagine, how do you envision somebody actually paying attention to somebody else saying the words? Says the Shulchan Aruch, it's not going to happen. And therefore, even though Berov HaMatzos Melech would have been a good idea, but since benching is so long, so we cannot expect people, I'm sorry, but we can't expect people to pay attention for that long, and therefore each person has to recite the benching on their own. Well, here's the question. When it comes to Kiddush, is that too long for people to pay attention, and therefore each person should recite on their own? Or is it like the Bracha Shehakol Nieh B'Dvaru, that why can't I listen to somebody else? It's good enough. So that's the question. That's where these two practices came from. On the one hand, everybody would agree that Berov HaMatzos Melech is a very wonderful consideration. Berov HaMatzos Melech should dictate that one person, one member of the household, should recite the Kiddush on behalf of everyone because it enhances the mitzvah for all of us. If we all do it together and one person does it on behalf of everybody at the table, that's better than each person doing it on their own. But the consideration on the other hand is, perhaps the Kiddush is too long for us to pay attention to somebody else reciting. Perhaps it's like the Bracha of Yotzer Ar. Perhaps it's like Birchas HaMazon, which is too long to expect people to pay attention, and therefore the Shulchan Aruch assumes, maybe there's room to say, that with Kiddush as well, we should go ahead and have each member of the family recite the Kiddush on their own. So this is really where that practice comes from. I just want to close with one more halachic consideration, which is a very, very critically important one, and that is the Tur writes in number Hey, Tur writes in Simon, Kuf Chav Dalet, the Tur was the father of the Rush, and the Tur is what all of the Shulchan Aruch was based off of. The Tur was written first, and then the Shulchan Aruch basically took many of the values, many of the halachos that the Tur wrote, and codified it in his own writing in the Shulchan Aruch. So says the Tur as follows, Shamati mi'Abba Mori, I heard from my father, who was the Rush, one of the great Rishonim, Shehaya Omer al kol bracha u'bracha shehaya shomea b'chol makom. Every time the Rush, every time my father used to hear anybody recite a bracha, he would say, Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo. Right? And this has become widespread practice all over the world, that after we hear a bracha, after we hear Hashem's name in a bracha, we say, Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo. Correct? Anybody who does not have that practice? Okay. So why is it that some people do not recite Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo? Tur writes it's a good idea to do that. So why can you have an objection? What could be wrong with that? So the problem is as follows. When you come to a bracha that somebody else is reciting on your behalf, so why are you able to be Yotzei, let's say Kiddush? How can you be Yotzei Kiddush with somebody else? Well, we said Shamei Ka'ona. You're listening, and that's good enough. That suffices. It's as if you're saying it on your own. Well, let's say I'm saying a bracha on my own. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nieh B'Dvaru. Right? That's the bracha. So imagine, I'm saying my bracha. Baruch atah Hashem Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo Elokeinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nieh B'Dvaru. Am I Yotzei my bracha? If I'm saying it on my own. Everyone would agree that that's a hepsik in the middle of the bracha. I cannot say those words in the middle of my own bracha. Well then, if I'm listening to somebody else's bracha, who's trying to be motzi me, for example, Kiddush, and I'm going to stick in the words Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo, what happens? If we really assume that the reason why I can be Yotzei a bracha with listening to somebody else is because it's as if I said it on my own, then I have to follow the rules of saying a bracha on my own. And the same way, when I'm saying my own bracha, shahakol, I'm not allowed to say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo in the middle of my own bracha, that would be a hefsik. Well, so too, if somebody else is reciting the bracha on my behalf, I'm not allowed to say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo in the middle. Not only is it a hefsik, but also you're going to miss out the next words that he says, and then you're certainly not going to be Yotzei the bracha. Now let's look. Shulchan Aruch HaRav, the last source on the sheet, written by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, a very interesting halacha sefer that's a very important work. So he writes as follows, Hayotze yidei chov b'tfila mipish shliach tzibur. Somebody who's fulfilling an obligation of a bracha from the shliach tzibur, for example, you have one member of the household recites Kiddush on behalf of everybody in the house. Ein lo lanos baruch hu baruch shemo achar birchas shliach tzibur. You are not allowed to say baruch hu baruch shemo when you're listening to a bracha that somebody else is saying on your behalf. Now, this is so important throughout the year. Let's say we all come to shul, and we want to be Yotzei Mikra Megillah. So we listen to the bracha, and we assume that that's going to count for our bracha. We cannot say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo when we're listening to that bracha. When we're having Kiddush, when we're having Havdalah, all these different things that we're being Yotzei with somebody else, we cannot say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo. V'chein b'chol makom sheshamei abrachal misabin latzos yideichol v'bishmi yasur kigon kiddush, havdala, birchas haperis, birchas hamitzvos, lo yane baruch hu baruch shemosha, rei ha-shomea hu ko'one. When you have somebody who's listening to another person recite the bracha on your behalf, how can you insert words into that paragraph? How can you insert your own words into that sentence? The same way you wouldn't insert into your own bracha, how can you insert them into somebody else's bracha who's reciting the bracha on your behalf? And therefore he says, asur lahafsik b'amtsa bracha. And if you do it, you're not yotzei the bracha. In fact, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that even b'di'eved, if mistakenly you said baruch hu baruch shemo, then you need to go back again and say the bracha over, because you made a hefsik in the middle of the bracha, and you're not able to be mekayim your responsibility, your obligation of reciting this bracha. So this is something that's very important to keep in mind. Whatever practice you have, if you have the practice either to have one person say the Kiddush on behalf of everybody in the family because Barov HaMadras Melech, or if you have the practice that each person recites on their own, you have to be careful that any time that you are listening to a bracha that somebody else recites on your behalf, you do not say the words of Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo. There were some Achronim that took it so far as to say, because we're concerned that people aren't going to remember that when they're listening to a bracha from someone else, we don't say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo. When I just hear someone else say a bracha, but I'm not being yotzei with them, I do say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo. It's going to get confusing. We're not going to remember when we're supposed to say it, when we're not. It's just instinctive that we say it. That's why some achronim say, you know what, forget about the whole thing. Don't say it at all. After any bracha, why? I'm not saying this is the practice for everyone, but some have that practice because they were concerned that you're going to make a mistake, and the consequence of making that mistake is that you're not going to fulfill your obligation of reciting a certain bracha. So therefore, some said it's a nice idea, Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo, but it's going to lead to a terrible problem, because sometimes people are going to say it in the wrong place, and they're not going to realize that this is different than the other kind of bracha. So therefore, Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo sometimes can cause a major problem. So let's just review what we spoke about today. Kiddush is, as we said, a mitzvah d'oraisa. The mitzvah d'oraisa is just to say the words of Kiddush. Midrabanan, they said you should say it on a cup of wine. Then we discussed, if you say that Kiddush is a mitzvah d'oraisa, the Magen Avraham says it's good enough if you say it in the tefillah, it's good enough if you say it in shul. And the problem is, if you assume that the husband is able to say his Kiddush in his Shemona Esrei in shul, what about the woman who's at home, who's not able to daven, she comes home, how can the husband go ahead and be motzi his wife in Kiddush if in fact he is no longer mechuyev, he's no longer obligated, she still has the same obligation she started with, so how can he be motzi his wife? And the answer to that is a few answers. Perhaps if he says, good Shabbos, wife, that would be good enough, or perhaps some other suggestions that we gave. Then we spoke about the din of Shamea Ka'ona, we spoke about Rav Hirsch, who writes that it's important that we not only say Kiddush in the shul, not only do we have our Judaism outside when we're in public with the peer pressure, but also we should have this idea of Kiddush, we should sanctify our homes, like the Kutzker Rebbe said, the first mitzvah we're given after Kabbalah Satorah is, Shuvu lachem la'aleichem, go and translate all the laws of the Torah, bring it into your own home. This is why Avraham Avinu is called the Isha Chesed, only after he goes ahead and buries his wife, because that's what Chesed is all about, not about everybody else. Chesed is about our own families, about our own communities, about our own people who we're close with, and not to run around first and take care of everybody else, like Reb Chaim Vital said, you're going to be waiting at the gates of Gan Eden, and they're not going to let you in. Oy vavoy to such a person, he writes. I feel so terrible for such a person who doesn't realize that the family comes first, that the first obligation that you have is to your spouse and to your children, and only after that do you move ahead and take care of other people. And then we spoke about the importance of Shamea Ka'ona, that sometimes we have this principle where one would be able to be mekayim his mitzvah by listening to somebody else recite the bracha as well. And if that's the case, not only is it a nice thing to do, but also you have the added maila, the added special feeling of Barov HaMadras Melech, that all of us are doing a mitzvah in one sweep. That would be a hider mitzvah we consider to be. But the problem is, when you're doing so, you have to keep in mind not to say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo, because that will constitute a hefsik. And Rav Moshe Feinstein and other Achronim suggest that if a person says Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo in the middle of a bracha that they're listening from somebody else, that would constitute a hefsik to the point that you would have to say the bracha again. Mitzvah Shem will continue next week.